Truth Seekers, Mark Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for joining us. Yeah, it's another day, another chapter in the madness in this country. This time the chapter is Hillary Clinton again. You got to wonder, or I got to wonder sometimes, with due respect to mental illness, and I'm serious, I've got mental illness rampant in my family, going back two generations. With due respect to mental illness, has Hillary Clinton lost her mind? What kind of person uses the assassination of any one of the political leaders in this country who have been assassinated as justification for her refusal to drop out of a race she can't win? Are we to believe that she's going to sway some uncommitted superdelegates to vote for her by saying, hey, wait a second, Obama might get assassinated, so, you know, choose me or don't choose anybody until at least after June? But to evoke or invoke the Bobby Kennedy tragedy just what's it been earlier this week that his brother Ted Kennedy, you know, who is a Obama supporter, Ted Kennedy diagnosed with has anyone used the word terminal yet? Brain cancer. And less than 2 weeks before the anniversary of that night in the hotel in California, Bobby Kennedy's assassination, Hillary Clinton may not be insane, clinically speaking, but doesn't this show, I mean, how many instances have we had to look at of Hillary Clinton demonstrating, first of all, that she has zero respect for Democratic Party principles? I'm kind of nonplussed. I don't know where to go with this. I can't believe what she is doing. I just can't believe it. Let me share with you an email I got right before the program. This is from Jen. She writes, Mike, you probably know about Hillary's rude and scary comments today. I just found out about it. And even if it was some sort of misspeak, I'm deeply saddened. No, I wasn't a Hillary supporter, and really I'm looking at Obama as the lesser of two evils. I am basically crossing my fingers and hoping he doesn't jump into the pocket of corporate America. No, I'm sad because of Hillary's actions and words. The words she has used basically will affect future female challengers to the White House. How soon do you think another woman will be taken seriously when trying to run for president? Women, as politicians, have, in a sense, been shoved back due to Hillary's run and Nancy Pelosi's lackluster, cowardly reign as Speaker of the House. When I think about how long it has taken for women in the United States to hold such high positions, and how history will judge these two individuals, I find I am deeply saddened to be a woman today in the United States. I also mourn for the legacy these two women have left young girls like my nieces, who are all under 20. Jen, I'm shocked. This is not the first time she's used the word assassination in regard to Barack Obama. This is the second or third time. The first time, I think, was in an interview in Time magazine. If Hillary wanted to make a statement about her her qualification to be president of the United States, now is the time to make it and just back out. As far as Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama being on the same ticket, will the next person who says that please stuff something in your mouth? A, it's never going to happen. Ever, 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 ever. Not in this universe, not in any parallel universe. Barack Obama is no more interested in having Hillary Clinton and the ghost of Bill Clinton haunting him for the next 4 to 8 years than he wants, I don't know what, to fall off the earth. This is nonsense. Well, what would he do? Beef up your Secret Service detail every time your vice president comes around? Of course, with trigger-happy Dick Cheney, that's probably already the case throughout most of D.C., right? So, I hate to use cliches, but what is wrong with this woman, Hillary Clinton? We'll let you hear it and decide for yourself. And, when I was making notes today, I wrote down, is this something or is this nothing? Don't they do that on the David Letterman program? I haven't watched Letterman for a long time. But don't they have a segment? Is this something or nothing? And then they do something. And you're supposed to decide. Is it really something or is it nothing? That's the way I feel about what Hillary Clinton said today. So we're going to play this soundbite for you. And then here's my request. I don't usually do this, but you tell me. I don't talk about anything else this first segment. You tell me if you think the comments made, and if you're a Hillary supporter, come on, bring it on. I want to hear what you've got to say. If you're not a Hillary supporter, okay. Don't get nasty. You don't have to call in and get nasty. But I just want to know if you think what she said today disqualifies her to be president or even run for the presidency. She uses these words too easily. She and her husband have absolutely gone after Barack Obama in a way that I don't know. It's just incredible. Racism and claiming her victimhood. I have never seen anyone claim victimhood the way Hillary Clinton does. And the comments, whether they are, I don't know. It's hard to believe this is really happening. For me, it is anyway. To watch what she is doing, the trigger words, the insinuations, her straight out words that she appeals to white voters. I mean, she is going for the gut. Is this what it takes when you are hell bent to be president? To bring in racism, sexism, assassinations, dragging out somebody who was a revolutionary in this country when the candidate she's referencing was 8 years old. References to Jeremiah Wright, references to, he says he's not a Muslim. What the hell is this? Somebody ought to lead her off stage after dropping a cape around her shoulders like they used to do to James Brown and just take her off the stage. This is unbelievable stuff. We got time to play? Yeah, let's stretch this first segment and go ahead and play it. She was at a meeting with the Sioux Falls newspaper, Argus Leaders Editorial Board, while campaigning in South Dakota. So the first, is this two voices here? Okay, Hillary Clinton starts.
People have been trying to push me out of this ever since Iowa.
Why?
I find that, I don't know.
Why?
I don't know. I find it curious because it is unprecedented in history. I don't understand it. And, you know, between my opponent and his camp and some in the media, there has been this urgency to end this. And, you know, historically that makes no sense. So I find it a bit of a mystery.
You don't buy the party unity argument?
I don't, because, again, I've been around long enough. My husband did not wrap up the nomination in 1992 until he won the California primary somewhere in the middle of June. Right? We all remember Bobby Kennedy was assassinated in June in California. I don't understand it. And, you know, there's lots of speculation about why it is, but...
What's your speculation?
I don't know. I find it curious, and I don't want to attribute motives or strategies to people because I don't really know.
Jesus, I mean, that is so disconnected from any kind of not just reality, any kind of connection to the tragedy in this country of political assassinations going back to Lincoln and working. I mean, when you think about the attempts on Wallace, the attempts on Ford, the attempts on Reagan, the assassinations of two Kennedys, Dr. King. I mean, how far back in history you want to go? Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley. It just... And for her to toss this off as though it's a reason to stay in the primary. What in the hell is wrong with this woman? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Moore.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
It's about 22 past the hour. One of the things from that quote, aside from the egregious reference of Bobby Kennedy's assassination, when she says people have been trying to push her out of the primary ever since Iowa, which is delusional. But in her next statement, after she's asked why, she says, I don't know. I find it curious because it's unprecedented in history, whatever that means. And then she says, between my opponent and his camp and some in the media, there's been an urgency, this urgency to end this. I don't think Barack Obama has, for the length of this campaign, up until the numbers started to indicate that he is going to be the Democratic nominee, I don't think Barack Obama has been urging her to end anything. As a matter of fact, haven't his latest statements been to encourage her to stay in as long as she wants to? There's something terribly, terribly wrong here. Now, within 2 hours of making that statement, she apparently realized she's just got to stop justifying her campaign by suggesting that Barack Obama might get assassinated. You know, that's just not going to work. That's not a very good selling point there, Senator Clinton. So she kind of, sort of, apologized. And as Keith Olbermann mentioned tonight, she's hinted at this Bobby Kennedy justification at least four times in the last 3 months. What is leaking out of her brain?
In the course of that discussion, mentioned the campaigns that both my husband and Senator Kennedy waged in California in June in 1992 and 1968. And I was referencing those to make the point that we have had nomination primary contests that go into June. That's a historic fact. The Kennedys have been much on my mind the last days because of Senator Kennedy, and I regret that if my referencing that moment of trauma for our entire nation, and particularly for the Kennedy family, was in any way offensive. I certainly had no intention of that whatsoever.
It's astonishing. There's no apology here. She doesn't say, She says, I regret that if my referencing was in any way offensive, I regret it. Not I'm sorry as hell for saying something that I have no business saying. Not I apologize to the Kennedy family for bringing up the murder of one of their sons in order to justify my goddamn campaign. No, she didn't say that, did she? I apologize to Barack Obama for the fourth time making reference to somebody's going to kill the son of a bitch. I'm sorry for that. No. She didn't say any of that, did she? She said she was referencing the point that we have had nomination primary contests that go into June. You goddamn maniac. Is that what you meant? You know, Keith Olbermann and Randy Rhodes and Jeff Barrios and everybody else can dance around this. She's a goddamn freak. I won't. Get out of the race, you nutcase. Go someplace where you can take a long, deserved rest. You need it. Get out of town, lady. Go hang out with the Scaife family. Go hang out with Rupert Murdoch. Go hang out with some of your new friends. Get out of here. You are polluting what's left of our political system. You're insane. Go away. Shut up. God. No. I'm not going to use all kinds of pretty language. This woman's out of her freaking mind. Go away, Hillary. Go away. How dare you make these kinds of comments in the kind of political atmosphere that we live in this country now, with everybody's temper on hair trigger level, with people walking around figuring out ways to murder other people? Get out of town, lady. Go.
Baby, I'm a son of fly.
It's more of Mike Malloy.
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather. Happy trails.
25 before the hour. By the way, coming up next hour, at the top of the next hour, Frank Schaefer is going to join us. He is the author of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elected, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take It All, or Almost All of It, Back. That'll be interesting. Stick around for that, okay? Molly Ivins, back in January of 2006, said, quote, I'd like to make it clear to the people who run the Democratic Party that I will not support Hillary Clinton for president. And in her column, she goes on to explain why. The references to a dead Barack Obama kind of fit into her reference of obliterating Iran. Obliterate. I mean, that's one hell of a word. Attacking. Invading, bombing, those words are powerful and bad and negative enough because they invoke images. But obliterate? Jesus Christ! She said that if Iran attacked Israel, that she or we or the U.S. would order or something. Remember? Obliterate. Do you know what that means? Does she know what it means? Or is she using a word whose meaning she doesn't quite grasp? Obliterate means to end everything in the country. Every baby, every child, every toddler, every school kid, every woman, man, every soldier, every member of the government, every one of the mullahs, every building, every park, everything. Obliterate is what she said. Who in the hell uses that kind of a word in threatening another country? Who uses obliterate? Jesus Christ, Khrushchev didn't say that. Reagan didn't say that. Obliterate? And Terry McAuliffe's reference, when was it? A couple of months ago, a couple of weeks ago, whatever the hell it was, on what? Beat the Press or Meet the Press or whatever these cheesy-ass Sunday talk shows are. Also, well, you never know what's going to happen, you know? June's not a good month for some people. He didn't say that, but that's what he meant. Obliterate. Assassination. Jesus, God. All right, let's go to your phone calls and try to get this out of the way. This is disgusting. John is calling from Denver, listening on the Internet. Hey, John.
Hey, let me turn down the volume here.
Sure.
Mike, boy, I got to tell you, it's a privilege to listen to you live. You know, you were on here in Denver on tape, I remember, late at night, and you're not there anymore, obvious to people here. But I got to tell you, Mike, I appreciate your perspective and your sense of humor. You make me laugh. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I got to tell you, I'm 55, so in 68 I was 15. We just moved to Denver. 40 years ago it was, and when we were in Albuquerque before he moved up here, I shook Robert Kennedy's hand. I think it might have been the same week when he was going out to L.A., and he was assassinated. And after Martin Luther King, that same summer, you know, I remember being in a motel room here when we first moved up here and watching the convention here. And then we're having the convention here now. I missed this whole Hillary thing. I got to agree with you. I was watching McNeil Lair tonight, and the guys. There's two guys. I can't remember their name.
Yeah, that's all right. What did they say?
Well, they were talking about it. I'm like, my God, what's going on? And the one guy I really like a lot. He's more on. You know who I'm talking about? I can't remember their name.
Yeah, I occasionally get a chance to watch the.
He was basically saying that, you know, Hillary's way kind of out of line and what's going on, you know. But I appreciate you bringing up this what she said, and I totally missed it. But I don't know. I feel a little. I got to catch my breath. I guess. Well.
All right. Well, no.
I'll end it on this.
Okay.
A movie by Warren. Well, here's what it is. Shadow Play, a book about the Robert Kennedy assassination. Okay.
Right. Right.
I'm sure you're familiar with it.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, I read it again not too long ago, and it's just so blatant.
Right.
The way whoever's in control, if they want to get rid of somebody, they get rid of somebody, and there's basically no trial.
Well, that's very, very, very possible, John. I think the assassination attempts and the political hits in this country are absolute proof of what you're saying. The majority of Americans right now, according to an ABC poll, I think the majority of Americans are concerned, nervous, worried, or whatever, that somebody is going to make an effort to stop Barack Obama by shooting him. A high number, 83%, I believe the poll said, of African Americans feel that way. Something like 59% of white Americans feel that way. In that atmosphere, is Hillary Clinton so consumed with she and her husband's power quest? Look, they had 8 goddamn years. That's enough. Go home. Go home. She always talks about her involvement in the first and second Clinton terms in the White House. Okay. We believe you. Now go home. You had 8 years. Get out of here. But she is so consumed with this that in this political atmosphere, she's going to keep bringing this up and then adopt a victim stance that so many people in this country are willing to absorb. Oh, yeah, you bastards in the media keep doing it to poor Senator Hillary Clinton. You keep doing it to her. It's your fault. Jesus, what's wrong with you people? Is it the media going around talking about Barack Obama being assassinated? No! It's Hillary Clinton and Terry McAuliffe. Is it the media rigging the primary rules in where some states' results are accepted and some aren't? No! It's the Clinton campaign. What the hell is wrong with you people? Clutch onto her, if you will. Someday, probably soon, there's going to be a female candidate and finally elected president who deserves it. But it ain't this person. Not by a damn sight. Why do I get so upset about this? Because John McCain is a total ass. He's worse than zero. And because of this fighting in the Democratic Party that Hillary Clinton is keeping going, that miserable son of a bitch McCain may wind up as president. That's why this, that's one of the reasons this has me just absolutely infuriated. Plus, like a lot of Americans, I came out of the ether of the 90s and realized, I look around at the damage that George W. Bush has done and realize that the precursor for this damage was set up by Bill Clinton. You don't think so? You don't think so? Then go back and read over what happened in the 90s. So her candidacy, especially at this point, is insane. She knows what exists in this country. She knows the kind of goddamn morons are lurking out there behind every signpost and burning cross and KKK emblem and Christian nutball organization. She knows. So she's going to toss out lines like this to inspire one of these freakoids to do it? Jesus God!
I thought her comments couldn't get much worse after she went on O'Reilly and gave her little rich like us speech about, you know, oh, I'm not going to raise your taxes too much. No, rich people, God bless us. I thought that would probably be the end point, the end game, the final note. But no,
Alex,
it just keeps getting worse.
Alex writes in, Mike, I thought I'd bring up a point that no one's thought of, brought up yet. What are Obama's young daughters going to think when they see the words assassinate either on the television screen or in a newspaper in relation to their father? Hillary obviously did not think about the feelings of these young girls. This is just so despicable. Just thought you might want to have a conversation about what Obama's children might be thinking right now. I don't know. I would imagine that the Obama family protect their two daughters from this kind of madness to the extent that they can. But the fact that Hillary Clinton, I mean, what is she thinking about when she makes these kinds of statements? Is she so inarticulate that this kind of stuff just trips off her tongue with no malicious intent or no reference to history, or is there something more there? Either way, I don't care. If somebody, we've had 8 years of some knuckleheaded jackass in the White House who makes the kinds of statements that can cause people to die. Do we need another one? 6 feet 10, I guess you'd call it cowardice.
Can't stand losing you.
on the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Frank Schaefer is going to join us right after the break at the top of the hour. He's got a book out, Crazy for God. His family is one of the families that helped actually found and establish the religious right. And, well, we only got the book a couple of days ago. I think I've read, what, Kathy, about 50 or 60 pages. It's a pretty interesting read. But we want to get him on the air and find out where he, how he feels about the religious right now, since it's become such a force for evil in this country, on this planet. Back to your phone calls. Bruce in California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Bruce.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. Well, first of all, I want to preface my remarks by saying the only comment I've heard from Hillary regarding assassination was this one. You've made comments that there were others. And
yeah, she was quoted. She was quoted in Time magazine in what, Kathy? March. Go to Time's website. Type in Hillary and assassination. Do a search. You'll find it right away.
Okay.
Plus, there have been a couple of veiled references that you can find if you have the energy to do your own research.
Okay. Well, my comment is specifically about this one comment tonight, and my reaction to it is that she probably meant, I think the apology was reasonable. I think that, you know, she was talking in a historical context. However, there's in a historical context, there's something else that really bothers me, and that is that I've been a student of JFK's assassination for decades, and even E. Howard Hunt made a deathbed confession,
right,
in which he pointed to LBJ as the mastermind or one of the masterminds behind it. Saying that, knowing that JFK was thrust upon LBJ was thrust upon JFK by the convention and by the political whims of the time, even though the man really hated JFK, and JFK felt pretty much the same way about him. My feeling is that I'm concerned that if Hillary is thrust upon Obama as his vice presidential nominee, we could be setting up the same kind of a scenario.
Well, I think that's there's a good chance that that might happen. Except for one thing, Bruce, and that is the elders in the Democratic Party, whether they are superdelegates or whatever they are at this point, I'm sure that the phone lines were burning up today. I'm sure the cell phones and the Blackberries, and word was flying around among the uncommitted superdelegates, this has gone far enough. And so I don't think I would worry about that one. I really don't. I understand what you're saying. I see the scenario that you're constructing, but that's kind of just a little bit out there for even someone like me. You know what I'm saying?
Well, plus, I think it just goes without saying there's not a chance in hell. Karl Rove has a better chance of being Obama's.
Right. Well, I think so.
Rod Parsley has a better chance of being a vice president.
I think you're right. Jeff is calling from Atlanta, listening on the Internet. Hey, Jeff.
Hey. If we could just for a moment take Hillary Clinton and her spokesperson at their word and just to say repeatedly since March that they bring up this point about 1968 and then the horrible mention of the assassination, simply to establish that June nomination fights, the nomination fights that go into June, are nothing uncommon or that harmful.
Mm-hmm.
If we take that at a word, and her words, nothing particularly unusual.
Right.
It's very interesting, in fact, intellectually unsound and deceitful, that she picks 1968, the year in which the incumbent LBJ declines to run for re-election. His vice president, Humphrey, faced two anti-war challengers, one of whom gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a police riot at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
Humphrey gets the nomination without entering a single primary, and then the Democrats lose. And that is the example that Hillary Clinton uses to show that June nomination fights are nothing particularly unusual and not to be feared.
Oh, God, I get your point. and we all know who won that year. Richard Nixon!
Exactly.
I get your drift, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for checking in. Oh, my God. Tamara is calling from Mesa, Arizona, listening to KPHX. Hey, Tamara.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to say that I don't want her to be part of the ticket with Obama, and
right.
I'm hoping he doesn't, which I doubt he will. because of the whole water, the white water thing. And I'm scared that one day he may, like, end up dead and she'll be at the podium or addressing people saying that she didn't know that this was going to happen. And she just, I don't know, she...
Well, this is the kind of thing that happens, Tamara. You know, Hillary makes two or three or four direct and veiled references to the assassination of her opponent, and then it makes people just get weird. Not that you're weird, Tamara. I'm not suggesting that, but the comments that are flying around the internet right now are. Like I said, they're even out there for a nutcase like me. Some of these comments are just getting a little bit out in the ozone. But Hillary Clinton's cold, offhand statements about Barack Obama being gunned down are also out there beyond anything I can comprehend. I cannot imagine, or I couldn't up until today, someone making comments like this, a series of comments, like Keith Olbermann said tonight, how many things are we supposed to forgive her for that she has done in this campaign? And it's not been that long. It seems like it's been going on forever. But what the accumulated comments and actions of Hillary Clinton are just so far outside. This is what you would expect Barack Obama's Republican scum-sucking opponent to do in the campaign for the general election. But this is coming from another Democrat who is hell-bent on getting this nomination no matter what. But I just wish she would withdraw. Just get out. Rather than keep this going and with all these insane comments that generate so much suspicion in the country. It's incredible. At the very least, she's trying to plant the seed of doubt in voters' minds about the possibility that Obama's in danger. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I'm Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. As promised, we're going to talk with Frank Schaefer for a few moments. So it'll take the better part of our scheduled interview here to adequately introduce him. So for the sake of brevity, may I suggest you go to frankschaefer.com where his curriculum vitae will nearly overwhelm you. Suffice it to say, Frank Schaefer has written a number of books, and his latest is Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect. Helped found the religious right and lived to take it all or almost all of it back. Frank, thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I've got to ask you right away. This question would make no sense to anyone listening, but maybe you can explain it. Having just received your book a couple of days ago, I have gotten past the part about monkey blood.
Yeah, monkey blood. I grew up in a fundamentalist missionary home in Switzerland. My parents were American missionaries, and you know, their view of creationism, creation, and all the rest of it when I was a child was very, very literal. And, you know, as I was growing up, liking to tease my mother once in a while, I had a little thing that I would tell her related to the fact that when I was a kid I had polio, and they gave me some weird serum treatment at a local hospital. This is back in the 50s in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Where supposedly this serum was derived from chimpanzee spinal fluid, and they replaced some of mine, and you know, years later, a surgeon friend of mine said that it should have actually killed me. But, you know, when I was about 11, I would tell my mom, well, you know, the monkey blood worked with me, so, you know, that must prove evolution is right after all, you know, and she would kind of get irate. But I mentioned that anecdote in Crazy for God, kind of in the opening chapters about my early childhood.
And it's a very easy and interesting, I must say, interesting read so far. I'm maybe 75 pages into it. You and your family certainly had a unique situation where it concerns, well, just where it concerns your family life, but especially because of your parents' role in the establishment of the Christian right or the religious right. How did you come to write this book? Well, other than a memoir, why?
Well, you know, basically, I've written a couple of novels. Actually, I've written four novels, but three of them are the Calvin Becker trilogy, Portofino, Zermatt, and Saving Grandma, and those were sort of loosely biographical. And, you know, when you write fiction, you're a little bit damned if you do, damned if you don't. Your family is a little ticked off because it's too close to
sure.
truth. And then other people are saying, well, you know, why don't you tell your real story? And I guess, you know, at age 55 and kind of looking back over my life, having been writing fiction and nonfiction for a while, I began to write Crazy for God and found that as I got into it, you know, telling the real story was something that helped me kind of sort through and deal with some of the ramifications of a very long kind of bizarre journey from a fundamentalist childhood in Switzerland through a time when I was a teenager in the late 60s and early 70s, my dad became quite known. The late Francis Schaeffer and Edith Schaeffer were evangelical icons by the time I was in my 20s. And for a while, I was my dad's sidekick. You know, if you look at people like Billy Graham or Reverend Schuller or others, it's quite common in the evangelical fundamentalist world for family members to kind of latch on to the ministry and, you know, I guess from one point of view, almost like parasites. From another point of view, you've been raised in it and there's not much else you know how to do.
Right.
And so, you know, if the business of the family is packaging and selling God, I guess, you know, that's what you do. But then as I got a little older, got into my late 20s, I began to wonder exactly what it was I was doing trailing around with my dad at that time on the pro-life circuit of the religious right with C. Everett Koop, who went on to become Surgeon General with Ronald Reagan. And, you know, we were very connected with the Republican Party. And gradually I just understood in my own life that this is something that I had been kind of conditioned to do. But these beliefs were really not my own. And eventually we parted company, not the family, but me from my parents' ministry, which I kind of had inherited. And so really Crazy for God is a book that begins in early childhood in Switzerland but ends up, you know, very close to the present here in the U.S. where as an adult and now as a father myself and as a grandfather, I'm looking back and understanding that, you know, mine is kind of a very American journey. Not only have I changed faith and abandoned the faith of my childhood, but also changed politics and gone from someone who, you know, had Gerald Ford's son Mike studying in LaBrie Fellowship, which was my parents' ministry when I was a young man, you know, to a time now when I'm writing a lot for the Huffington Post on why I support Barack Obama for his run for the presidency. And I guess Crazy for God just charts that journey that's both spiritual and also just human and emotional.
Mm-hmm. How has your experiences, and again, I have to reference the uniqueness of your experiences, different entirely from those, say, of Franklin Graham or the Oral Roberts' son.
Sure.
Entirely different, and I have to use the word unique. How have your experiences changed, if they have at all, your concept of God?
Well, they were different in several ways. First of all, I was very lucky in that my father was on his own journey, and so was my mother. But Dad in particular went from being this evangelical fundamentalist minister who went over to Europe in 1947 to a time in the 1960s when LaBrie Fellowship, his ministry, was sort of an early commune before places like that were called that. And he developed a tremendous interest in the arts and art history. And as a young man, you know, I took up painting and filmmaking, and in fact wound up in Hollywood many years later making for very dreadful, low-budget Hollywood feature films, mm-hmm. but in what seemed to be another lifetime as I was pulling away from my background. But fortunately, my dad was not an Oral Roberts or a Jerry Falwell, whose son was following in the ministry footsteps really without any clue that there was a bigger world out there. My dad was interested in the larger universe. And
as was your mother.
Yeah, as was my mom. And so actually they served me very well as far as that went, because they were open mm-hmm. to the arts and they were open to ideas. And while their religion was quite basically evangelical in terms of their cultural interest, it was a bit schizophrenic, because mm-hmm. Dad was actually happiest when wandering around art museums with me, far happier than he was when he was, quote-unquote, doing his ministry. So really, my evangelical background was different than other people's in that there was always a door open somewhere to a different way of looking at things. And mm-hmm. Crazy for God tracks the journey that I took that took advantage of that open door. And so I think really in that sense my background was not typical. In another way, though, it was, and you talk about faith, and that is that even today I'm trying to sort out, what do I believe, what was I conditioned to believe, what did I inherit, what is mine, and I've kind of given up on that process, and I guess in Crazy for God talk about the fact that I found some personal peace simply by coming to the conclusion that it doesn't really matter knowing where I begin and other people's ideas leave off, and rather, finding those things in the arts, in writing, in my family, in relationships with other people that kind of transcend theology. And mm-hmm. I've gone from a kind of a very theologically based sort of faith, almost an intellectual system of Calvinist Protestantism that I was raised in, and I talk about at the beginning of Crazy for God, to a place now where I happen to go to a Greek Orthodox church on Sundays when I go to church at all. And that's a community of worship which is not so much theologically based as a kind of a mystical experience of a very ancient liturgy that goes on, with or without any kind of one-man show of a big pastor or anything like that. It's hasn't changed much in many hundreds of years. And I sort of take refuge in a non-man-based religious experience, but also I guess see myself different now in that I don't look at everybody who doesn't worship mm-hmm. exactly as I do or my family does as quote unquote lost. Whereas
let me interrupt just for a second, Frank, because we have to take a break here. But
sure.
When we come back, in the interest of full disclosure, I was brought up Methodist and Baptist, but I have become a total at this stage in my life, and I'm older than you, a total full blown atheist. And what I would like maybe you could address for a moment when we come back is how to balance non-theism with theism, if there is a balance. So let's take a quick break. We're talking with Frank Schaefer, who is the author of Crazy for God. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
You need a busload of faith to get by. What? Busload of faith to get by. Busload of faith to get by. Busload of faith to get by.
Twenty-one past the hour, we're talking with Frank Schaefer, whose latest book is Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take It All or Almost All of It Back. Frank, that question, I guess at this point in my life, I come from the position maybe not to align myself with these folks, but Carl Sagan or Richard Dawkins or Christopher Hitchens, where it concerns the idea of divinity or divine being or just the whole God concept, whether
sure.
it's anthropomorphized or not. And I sometimes question my comfort level with this, but this is where I'm at now, and it feels right for me. I don't suppose that you are at that point, but I just wonder how someone who is a believer makes whatever salient points are necessary to a non-believer.
Yeah, well, I certainly have no answers on this in the sense of, like, here's the seven things I think or believe. Or,
right.
I think if someone reads Crazy for God, they'll see that, you know, for me, doubt and faith are the same word in a way. And, you know, it depends which day you catch me. I mean, there are days when I'm definitely an atheist. There are days when I'm an agnostic. There are days when I feel like I'm 10 years old and, you know, and I'm a fundamentalist Christian again. Most of the time when I'm thinking about it, I think that my emotional reaction, my intellectual reaction are two different things. I guess the place I'm at now and that I talk about for in the book in terms of just where my own journey took me was some sense of peace when it comes to just not knowing and knowing that this life is not long enough to draw definitive conclusions about very much at all. So, you know, we hope, we muddle along. And, you know, when I talk to someone who's an atheist, as many of my friends are, or someone who's an agnostic or someone who's still a fundamentalist believer, you know, what I understand is that we could trade places, and a lot of it has to do with who raised you, what you reacted for or against, because even in reacting against something, you're still part of something else. None of us come from a vacuum. And so, you know, if we were sitting down and talking about this with you know, over the course of a couple of months or years or whatever, back and forth, I think there would be plenty of days when Hitchens or Dawkins or you know, the arguments made in books like The Selfish Gene or any of these other books would be very convincing to me. Probably what wouldn't convince me would be a kind of an absolutist point of view in either direction. And I would find that kind of, you know, another form of fundamentalism. In other words, sometimes when I read Hitchens, it's almost like I'm reading, you know, my dad, except in reverse. And, you know, there's just too few sentences that finish with, I could be wrong. And that's kind of where I'm at. In other words, I hold on to a certain form of faith, not knowing exactly whether this is something I believe or whether this is something that I was conditioned to believe, knowing that it gives me a certain comfort level. And, for instance, prayer comes very naturally to me in terms of, you know, wanting to talk to someone out there. You know, my son was in Iraq getting shot at as a Marine. He's out of the Marine Corps now, and I wrote about that experience in a book called Keeping Faith, A Father-Son Story About Love in the United States Marine Corps. Well, having been raised by a praying mother and father, obviously confronting those sorts of challenges in life, I turn toward prayer and feel comfortable with it. But on the other hand, it's not in the sense that I'm absolutely sure that I'm being heard or that this is going to solve everything for me. It's just, this is who I am. This is where I'm at. And, you know, as I said before, and I talk about in the book, I'm kind of past trying to sort out what my real views are and simply just the way I feel or respond emotionally. So I would have a hard time in trying to convince you to believe in God again in terms of a rational argument that would contradict something Hitchens said. On the other hand, you know, Hitchens would have a hard time in talking me out of the fact that for some reason, you know, human beings' quest for meaning keeps leaning toward some sense of the divine. And for me personally, I just don't fight that. So I don't know. That's sort of a non-answer, but that's the best I can do.
Well, I can respect that. It's been my opinion, and I've worked to get to whatever conclusions I have at this point in my life, but it's in my opinion that an absolutist point of view is almost required when this. I don't want to get too heady here because we're almost out
sure.
of time, but an absolutist point of view is almost required specifically about this issue. I can't see, while I can understand where you're coming from for sure,
right?
But I and people who either believe or don't believe. Okay, fine, but to be in somewhere in that kind of unformed middle of
yeah.
well, today I'm an atheist, but yesterday I was a believer, and tomorrow I don't know where I'll be.
Yeah,
that almost is a little bit scary to me. Whereas being an absolute believer or being an absolute non-believer seems to be less frightening. Frank, we're going to have to talk again.
I'd love to.
It's been a slice of heaven, if you'll pardon the expression,
yeah,
having
yeah.
you on the program. And we'll talk again. Thanks
Anytime.
So much.
Anytime. And listen, thanks very much. And as you mentioned at the beginning, anybody who wants to send me an email, just go to frankschaefer.com and I do answer my email.
Sounds great. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks a lot. Talk again.
All right. The name of the book is Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect. helped found the religious right and lived to take it all or almost all of it back. And go to frankschaefer.com if you want more information. Stay with us. I'm Mike Beloy. This is Nova M Radio.
The kid in the corner looked at the priest and fingered his pale blue Japanese guitar. The priest said, God wants goodness, God wants light, God wants mayhem, God wants clean things.
About 25 before the hour. All right, here's a statement from Robert Kennedy Jr. A statement was issued this evening. Quote, it is clear from the context that Hillary was invoking a familiar political circumstance in order to support her decision to stay in the race through June. I have heard her make this reference before, also citing her husband's 1992 race, both of which were hard fought through June. I understand how highly charged the atmosphere is, but I think it is a mistake for people to take offense. End quote. Robert Kennedy Jr. The plan was, and I'm not sure. I got an email here from Lou in Fayetteville, Arkansas, but this is how the Associated Press was reporting it. Bush starts raising money for McCain's campaign next week with three fundraisers. All closed, of course, and McCain attending only one, and there would be no chance for the public to see the outgoing and incoming Republican Party leaders. The White House announced today that Bush will be the main attraction events on Tuesday and Wednesday in Phoenix, Salt Lake City, and Park City, Utah. In addition to building up the McCain campaign account, the fundraisers will also benefit the National Republican Party, yada, 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 yada. All are being held in private residences. During the Bush presidency, the press has nearly always been banned from fundraisers in private homes. Dana Perino, Bush press secretary, said the fundraisers are closed because it had been the McCain camp's policy to close all money events. She said that's their practice and we respect it. She added, however, that it is possible the two men would appear together waving at television cameras in Arizona upon arrival or departure of the president's plane. Oh, Jesus, be still my beating heart. They're going to wave at us? Ah, all right. Well, that's from a few hours ago. This comes from Lou in Fayetteville a few minutes ago. Mike, on May 27th, Bush and his clone, McWar, were to have a fundraiser in Phoenix where the Veterans for Peace and others are going to have a massive anti-war demonstration. So much for the alleged war hero and his commander-in-chief who chickened out and moved the $25,000 per couple event to another county. Yada, yada. So I don't know. Let me ask our associate producer, Ian. Ian, if you're there, do you have any information about moving this thing from Phoenix? Yeah, the Bush-McCain event in your city. I understand now it's been moved.
Yeah, the Secret Service pulled the plug. They felt that too many protesters and too many people would know about it, and also actually because I don't think they've sold enough tickets to support such a large venue.
I see.
So they're going to have it out at some corporate headquarters out in all places, Mesa.
Well, that would
not
be...
not to put down Mesa. A lot of nice people live in Mesa, but considering we scared him out of downtown Phoenix, that says a lot.
It does indeed. Thanks, Ian.
Sure.
So there you have it. There will be these fundraisers, but these guys, and understandably so. I mean, let's not be too hard on the war criminal George W. Bush and the other war criminal John McCain. Let's not be too hard on them. They understand. That Bush is the most disliked man in America right now and probably the most disliked human being on earth because of what he's done and continues to do. And as far as McCain, See, this is the part I don't understand. After what the Bush campaign did to John McCain in 2000, I am surprised that, John McCain manages to be in the same room, the same county with Bush. I'd like to say something stronger, but I dare not. I just don't understand how McCain is willing to suck up what the Bush people said about him, McCain, his wife, and their adopted child, and suck it up to the point where he spent the next 8 years doing whatever Bush told him to do. I don't know. That's beyond me, except for the fact that these are Republicans. Republicans have zero honor. Nothing. They have zero integrity. They are devoid of honor and integrity. They are devoid of, decency and honesty. It's not in them. So Bush can say all the ugly things he said about McCain and his family today, and a week from now, McCain will be grabbing his ass and trying to kiss him on the cheek and telling him what a great leader he is. This is what Republicans do. Me? Somebody insults my family like that, and the son of a bitch better make sure he has armed guards around him, probably for the rest of his life. I'm not talking about if I were a presidential candidate. I'm just talking about if somebody said the kinds of things that Bush said about McCain, and someone said it about me, and I had a chance. Now, I get stuff like that through emails, but they usually come from cowards. Who can't even use their ISP email addy because they know I will hunt them down and pound them into the ground. Or worse. But I can't, you know, I can't stand cowardice. I just can't. I can't handle cowards and hypocrites and people who are duplicitous that on one hand will absorb this kind of hideous mistreatment and then turn from somebody and then turn around and suck up to them 5 minutes later. No, that's not my style. It really is not. I don't think it's most people's style. Is it yours? Would you do that? No. I'm not trying to come across as a badass here. I'm just saying, isn't this your attitude too? Somebody starts phone messages about you and your wife and your child and attacking you and saying things that they know are going to be perceived as ugly and hateful and despicable about your family. What are you going to do? Go see the guy 6 months later, have dinner with him, and pat him on the ass and tell him what a great American is? No, I don't think you will. I think the next time you see him, he'll have a knuckle sandwich on the end of your arm. Right or wrong? Right. Man. Who sent this? This is a post from, I think, who sent it? Here's what it says. If tomorrow, during a news conference, Hillary's head snaps backwards and like a human-sized Pez dispenser, and a green androgynous alien crawls out, grabs the nearest reporter, splits him open like a wet bag of groceries, and dines on his streaming entrails before crawling back into the Hillary shell and resuming the news conference, there will still be Hillary supporters behind her. We will hear things like, well, who hasn't eviscerated a reporter and made repast of his carcass when the situation called for it? Yeah. Or, here again, the Obama supporters are complaining because she's showing she's a strong woman. And stuff. What? Her head snaps back and a green androgynous alien crawls out, grabs nearest reporter, splits him open like a wet bag of groceries, and dines on his steaming entrails before crawling back into the Hillary shell and resuming the news conference. There will still be Hillary supporters behind her. Yeah, well, sure. You know, this is theology. Hillary's candidacy is theological in its nature and in its essence. This is the chosen one. This is the Messiah. So anyone who stands against this is not only an apostate, but is also trying to stem some sort of spiritual tide of inevitability that is the result of Hillary Clinton deigning to be president of the United States. That's why these reactions are so gut level from her supporters.
F you, Mike. You're just like the rest of these bastards attacking our Savior. What has she ever done to you? She walks on water.
Well, okay. You know, I can understand it. But why don't you call it what it is? You know, you have crossed the threshold or the boundary, the dividing line, if there is such a thing, between politics and theology. And you are now wandering in the wilderness of theology, waiting for the supreme being to reach down, snap the necks of everybody involved except Hillary Clinton, at which point a radiant light from heaven will beam down upon her. She'll be bathed in a holy radiance. And at that moment, the choirs of angels will start singing. And Hillary Clinton will rise. Amen, amen. Hillary Clinton, amen, amen, amen. I'm sorry, Kathy. Kathy, don't leave. Kathy! Oh, Jesus. Hold on a minute. Kathy! Kathy! Please come back. All right, I'll stop. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Now, don't leave me like that, you know, right in the middle of the... We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
That's all you need to, and I'll know it's all true. Superstar, what is it that you have got that puts you where you are? I am waiting, yes, I'm a captive fan. I'm dying to be shown that you are not just any man. So if you are the Christ, yes, the great Jesus Christ, feed my household with his breath.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're going to come back to your phone calls right after the big break at the top of the hour coming up pretty quick. There's a Wall Street Journal article online today. The subject of which, or the title of which, if $4 gas is bad, just wait. Based on oil trades, pump prices have room to grow. And they make a very salient point here. First of all, the setup. If oil hits $200 a barrel, which is the upper end of Goldman Sachs' prediction for prices over the next 6 months or to 2 years, then the gasoline picture changes quite dramatically. At $200 a barrel, crude oil alone would cost $4.76 a gallon. Add on the cost of refining and distributing, as well as taxes and pump prices, could rise into the range of $6 to $7 a gallon. That's the setup. Here's the punch in the nose. U.S. drivers haven't radically changed their behavior, and it is unclear at what price it becomes unprofitable for Americans to go about their usual day-to-day activities. A spokesman for the Fuel Merchants Association of New Jersey said, quote, maybe at $6 or $7 a gallon, it becomes less attractive to go to work. We haven't hit that point yet, but we might soon. End quote. Uh, It goes on to say the erosion in demand is likely to accelerate if gasoline prices shoot above $6. But a radical cutback in consumption will occur only if high prices weaken the U.S. economy further and contribute to increased unemployment. It's really bizarre. I frankly think that the American public will adjust to $7 or $8 a gallon oil. It means, gasoline. I know it would be hell on us. I know it would be immobilizing on so many people in this country. But on the other hand, in countries that are geographically smaller, I don't know if that translates into shorter distances for the citizens of those countries to travel to go where they want to go. But in so many other countries, countries in the European Union, isn't it the truth that gas already is $6, $7, $8 a gallon, the equivalent of a gallon, the equivalent of $6, $7, $8? Isn't that the truth? Now, given the fact that the euro has totally dominated the American dollar, I don't know how that translates any longer. But I know before the dollar was beaten to death by the Bush crime family, even trading at about parity with euros, it was still $6, $7, $8 a gallon in most European countries, right? Am I right about that? Am I wrong about that? So it seems that most of the world, not most of the world, please, that Western Europe, and I guess at this point Eastern Europe, has adjusted and has experienced that adjustment for a period of time. That, you know, $6, $7, $8 a gallon, yawn, crickets, you know, a big deal. Can we do that? At $7 a gallon, a fill-up costing $125 for the average family vehicle, can we do that? And if you do it four times a month minimum, say five times a month, can we do $600 a month in gasoline charges? Is that doable? Or are we going to at some point realize that really, 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 the jig is up? It's really, really reached an end of, first of all, the subsidized use of gasoline that we've experienced in this country, the horrific pollution caused by carbon-based fossil fuels. I know that's redundant. And that we have to change. We have to. Based on the idea there's still time to reverse a process that seems inexorable and is about to eat us alive. The global climate change. Not to mention, how in the hell are people going to afford these kinds of energy prices? If gasoline goes to that level, what about home heating fuel? What about electricity? Oh, man. Imagine if Ronald Reagan would not have ripped out of the White House the solar panels that the Carter administration put in. If the Reagan administration would have said, oh, solar panels, what's up with this? Oh, that's right. Didn't we just have a gasoline situation here in the United States? That's right. Gas was all the way up to damn near 80 cents a gallon at one point. Or no, it was up to damn near 65 cents a gallon at one point. We got to get it back to normal, you know, 35, 40 cents a gallon. What are these solar panels? It'll do what? Oh, it's energy? Oh, really? Supposing the Reagan administration would have adopted that attitude and using the so-called bully pulpit of the presidency would have pushed America starting 28 years ago to develop alternative sources of energy. Imagine, maybe we better not, because that could throw most of us who still are able to think into a hideous, depressive spiral that'll last all through the Memorial Day weekend. Never mind, I retract the statement. All right, your phone calls when we come back. We're going to take a break here, and we'll talk when we come back. All right, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Got an email from Anthony in Sweden. Anthony writes, heard your discussion on gas prices in Europe and thought I'd provide you with an article on the prices of gasoline around the world. Gasoline has climbed above $10 a gallon in Turkey. Sweden sees a steady climb in the first decade of this century, currently at $8.72 a gallon. While petrol-producing countries like Iran, it's 41 cents a gallon, Venezuela, 17 cents a gallon, and Nigeria, 38 cents a gallon, enjoy gas prices so low that it's almost comedic. Maybe the alternative, Anthony writes, to lower gas prices would be improved mass transit, excuse me, including buses and trains and subways. Yeah, I wish this country, the United States, had a train system in relative terms as efficient and as useful as some in Europe or Japan. But that was deep-sixed a generation or two ago when the oil companies decided and the automobile companies decided, oh, no, oh, no. Anthony writes, P.S. was incredibly disgusted by the comments made by Hillary Clinton today invoking the RFK assassination. Sweden saw Prime Minister Olof Palme assassinated in 1986 and Foreign Minister Anna Lindh stabbed to death in 2003. The comments made by Hillary today should disqualify her from the Democratic race. Just my opinion. Anthony in Sweden. Back to your phone calls. Ray is calling from Chicago, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm alive, still working on the rest. Well, when you first came on, it was driving me crazy. When I first heard this statement by Hillary, it was driving me crazy.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, Huckabee, with his comments at the NRA convention,
uh-huh.
And then there's some magazine that has Obama in a rifle scope.
That was right here. That was right here in the Atlanta area. There's a weekly newspaper published just north of Atlanta in one of the suburbs, Roswell, Georgia, and it was a weekly newspaper. And actually, it was the cover photo for a blog written by a liberal, and the writer was trying to make a point. But the net effect of this kind of stuff is it's getting too fixed in people's minds that Barack Obama might be in mortal danger because he has the audacity to run for the presidency. That's the problem.
It's the most craziest comment that she could have ever. She ought to just give it up, quit, and it's at no cost. It's at all costs for her to get this election, apparently. From the streets, that's called a cam shot. When you say something about somebody like that in an indirect way, you know, and if put it this way, from the streets, if somebody heard that, they would take you before you even had a chance, because that's just insinuating that you're coming after them. Have you heard the book of Round Brown's Body?
Yes.
Have you? Well, as soon as you get a chance, would you read that and have a discussion about that one day? I wouldn't want Hillary as a vice president for nothing in the world. You know, as I heard somebody say, if Hillary became the vice president, you better have a food taster. Barack better have a food taster for him. But anyway, this fuel thing. I'm a truck driver. I don't own my own truck. But if fuel prices continue to rise, and you was talking about the European prices,
right.
You know, I don't know how gradually they went up. But it seems like this is going, you know, skyrocketing at a rate that people have to catch up. It's going to be so expensive that people won't, you know, make a decision to work,
a
decision to buy food or pay a bill. You know, it's hitting people at a fast pace rate. Now with trucking, you can't get anything, nothing in the world. Everything in the world is delivered by a truck.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you can think of is delivered by a truck. Now, as the price of fuel keeps going up, everything is going to have to go along up along with that. So it's not only your fuel, it's not only your food, your fuel, but it's your food also. You can't buy anything. Every price increase on everything will go up.
Well, that's Go ahead, Ray.
It's becoming more of the haves and the haves not. We're going to be like a third world country if everything keeps going up at alarming rates. There's going to be those who have and the have not. Mm-hmm. The middle class will be cut out, you know, cut out altogether.
That's it. Well, you make some good points here, obviously, about the fuel cost just ripples through the entire economy. And you're right. I don't know any sector of the economy, our economy, that will not be or is not being affected by these rising of gasoline prices. And again, the Wall Street Journal article points out that so far it hasn't really impacted Americans in a direct way that we can see, although in an indirect way, you know, God forbid that the Wall Street Journal should realize that there are people living in their cars and people who are unemployed and on and on and on. The Wall Street Journal is about capitalism and business. There's no such thing as the Labor News Journal that is published in New York and gets the wide circulation around the country. It's business that gets the attention. But, excuse me, your comments are exactly right. Not that you need me to validate your comments, but no, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Prairie 2 writes, you can't compare Europe and the U.S. Price of gas because in Europe the bulk of the price is tax that offsets the cost for the consumer in other ways. Increasing the price through taxes doesn't create hyperinflation, though the rest of the economy, through the rest of the economy, like this will. He's referring to just the price of gasoline going up here without the massive taxes. He says, this cannot last as it will create a huge pool of cash in one part of the economy that has to go somewhere, or it will eventually come washing back over us in a tidal wave. I don't quite get that, Prairie 2. If you want to send me another email and kind of qualify or clarify, maybe I'm just being stupid tonight, but I don't quite get what you were saying there. Merrill is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Merrill.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I interpret Hillary's four heinous comments, you know, about assassination to be made to scare the Obamas into getting out of the race.
You think?
And yeah, I really do think that, and I think it's also made to scare the voters, of course, out of voting for him.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. I would think that the Obama family has thought this through completely before making this decision, and either have come to the conclusion that you can't live your life in that kind of fear, or that they're going to ignore it. I would assume it would be the former, not the latter. Now, I agree with you. It may be an attempt, whether conscious or unconscious, on the Clinton campaign's part to put that that thought in the minds of the rest of us.
Yeah, and apart from that, I mean, if this is Hillary after 15 months of campaigning against Obama, can you imagine her after or during the campaign, what things she would say if she had a campaign against McCain?
Yeah, and remember, do you remember what famous politician it was who said if there's two candidates and there's one pitching you fear and the other is pitching you hope, go with hope?
I don't, but
that was Bill Clinton.
Oh my God!
And that's when he was out hustling for John Kerry against George Bush because Bush was all about fear. All of a sudden, Hillary's all about fear obliteration. Hey, we got to go. Thanks, Merrill.
Okay.
I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
And rich white people, like her.
Rich white people.
Yeah, she loves them.
Yeah, she does.
God bless us. We're rich and we're white. Life's good.
Thank you.
forget tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Was it Chris Rock that said the only way a black president would be safe in this country is if he has a Latino vice president?
Calling Bill Richardson. No, actually, I wanted to say that I predict Wednesday. I want Wednesday in the pool for when Hillary makes the official announcement that she is leaving, finally, the race. The only question to me is what color pantsuit she'll be wearing.
You're a terrible sexist.
And which scarf and or large bead combination will be accompanying the pantsuit.
You are a terrible sexist.
I know. I hate my
own that's
sex.
That's what they got on Al Gore about his clothing, remember?
Well, the man did dress like he was in a casket all the time. I mean, I can't say too much about it. I'm not trying to be fashion police here, because if you guys saw me right now, I'm sitting here in sweats and a t-shirt, so it's not like I'm, you know, ready to make my runway debut or anything. But give me a break. I mean, Al Gore didn't look comfortable. He never looked comfortable.
Yeah.
Of course, neither does George Bush, but that's a different story. But no, the Hillary thing, it's got to take, if this doesn't take her down, what's it going to take? Like I said, I don't know. I mean, talk about being number one with a bullet. I don't know what it takes. I mean, she seems to be bulletproof. They called Clinton, her husband, the Teflon president. Maybe she's the Teflon candidate. But she talks about obliterating Iran. She jokes about how rich, you know, hey, God bless us rich people. You know, I'm not going to raise your taxes, Bill O'Reilly, my good buddy there on Fox, where I'm sitting here in the Fox studio. And she talks about, I don't know, there's just been so many of those things that she hints all the time about how she's got all the white vote and the rural people love her better and vote for the filly. Oops, did it die? I mean, I don't know what it takes. What does it take to stop this woman?
Well, it would
not
take...
talking about, you know, hinting at justifying her doomed campaign on the death of one of our most beloved politicians 2 weeks from that anniversary and 2 days after his brother gets a brain tumor diagnosis. And speaking of diagnosis, I had really hoped we'd get to McCain's release of his medical records.
Well, he refused to. He refused to. Oh, and by the way, I meant to mention this earlier. The caller the other night, who I think it was last night, who mentioned the website Vietnam Veterans Against John McCain, and I said I went to Veterans for John against John McCain. There was no such website. I had it wrong. It's Vietnam Veterans Against John McCain.com. And there is some fairly interesting stuff. There's also something written by Ted Rall that's up at commondreams.org that's been there for a while, I think. About McCain, some pretty weird stuff that I'd never heard before. You're not going to hear it in the mainstream media about his betrayal of the man who saved his life, the Vietnamese man. And this is hard for me to fathom. But when McCain's plane was shot down and he landed in the lake in central Hanoi, I believe, and was tangled in his chute gear, his lines, and was drowning, essentially drowning. Excuse me, and a Vietnamese person who was nearby saw it, jumped in the water, and essentially saved McCain's life. And they met up years later when McCain made a trip back to Vietnam, but nothing beyond that. And the old man, he was an old man when he died recently, and his wife said that for the rest of his life, he wondered why McCain never made any effort to contact him beyond that one meeting. Plus, the stories of McCain crashing, what, 3, 4, 5 aircraft and causing people to die, Americans to die, and fires, and the limited number of combat missions that he flew that were all designed to bomb and kill civilians. Why is this person called a war hero? Why does Barack Obama refer to him as a war hero? Why does anybody? He's a goddamn coward. He's an incompetent. I mean, he was an incompetent when he was in his 20s. He is now. It's unbelievable. And for all of you religious right freaks, you family values people, you know, he dumped his first wife for somebody else after, I don't know, what? He came back, his wife had gotten sick or been in a car wreck or something. I don't know that much about McCain because I've never taken him seriously. After the 2000 presidential primary, when he displayed the yellow streak 5 inches in width running down the middle of his back where it concerned George Bush and Karl Rove, that was it for McCain. Goodbye. You know, go away. If you will allow some piece of human waste like Karl Rove and George Bush to stomp you and your family like that, I don't want you within smelling distance. So, but all this stuff at this website about McCain, holy Toledo.
Is over. They say that all good things must end. Call it a night. The party.
No subliminal messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
What a crazy, crazy party. Never seen so many people. Laughing, dancing, look at you, you're having fun.
It's about 25 before the hour. Bob from Las Vegas writes, "Hey Mike, as a Vietnam vet that actually was shot at by a sniper, I was insulted by Hillary's lies on that and how she dismissed them. She shouldn't even be able to say the words commander-in-chief, much less aspire to that. What an insult to the troops. And now this assassination comment. As a veteran, I call on her to quit this race for president and to resign from the Senate. Go home and take Bill with you." Ooh. Back to your phone calls. Chris is calling from Albuquerque, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
What's going on?
Nothing but the rent.
All right. Well, I heard the guy earlier. And he was looking for the word, the secret group of people, and that's called a star chamber. But Ian also wanted to know if I had something to say about, you know, the Hillary thing. And the thing, there are a couple or several things. You got your basic group of people who might live in the southern part of the country who have a problem, and they're all armed. You got there could be a star chamber. This guy says things that they don't like, and if it turns out that he's telling the truth, he's going to make them real cranky. But the real problem is that this election or this, you know, the primary has been so awful and so the warring sides, she says this sort of thing, and there's some nut job, you know, sitting in his basement, you know, got nothing else to do in the world but listen to the radio and you know, be in love with Hillary. He hears this and goes, oh, wow, maybe that's, you know, that could be a command.
Well, that's the part that freaks me out, Chris. You know, I live in the part of the country where those people who sit in their basements really sit in their basements. And it's not that they love Hillary. They hate everything, but they especially hate people who don't accept the Lord Jesus Christ as their personal Savior, and they would like to go kill those people. And usually at the top of that list is somebody like me. But down the list, you will find that they don't like liberals. They don't like women. They don't like people of color. They don't like teenagers. They don't like music or dance or art. It's all beyond them. So the best way to react to all this sensory overload of trying to be alive is to go kill everyone else instead of doing the honorable thing, which would be to put the barrel in their own mouth and pull the triggers. So, yeah, I live in that part of the country where those kind of people exist. And they are legion. I'm not just, and people wonder, you know, oh, there's Malloy talking about he's got a permit to carry a gun again. Oh, damn, what's that about? Listen, I've been in the South for almost 40 years, and I would no more, I don't go to the grocery store unless I'm fully armed. Or not, you know, it just, whatever. I'm kind of like Israel and nuclear weapons. You never know. Phil is calling from Scranton, PA, listening on the internet. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad. All I got to say about the, you know, Mrs. Clinton's ordeal, she's coming to us. She's coming to us, you know, last right, night, that right. Lady last night. Oh, my God. I was cracking up so bad.
Are you talking about Hope?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I was just dying, Mike. I mean, I was crying.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
But, yeah, I really think that I heard this point about, you know, the Hillary thing. I could go on, but I'm not even going to discuss her because she knows it's over. But I heard somebody said, hey, you know what? Gas and another $1.75 is going to be the minimum wage.
If what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
That gas and another $1.75
is going to
be the minimum wage.
It's going to be
the minimum wage. So you're going to work to get gas.
Yeah, it's too
minimum
bizarre.
Wage should be at least be $13-14 bucks.
Right. I don't know what to think. As far as Hillary thinking it's over, she doesn't think it's over. She is, and I don't even think she's in a state of denial.
Well, I think these superdelegates are going to move very quickly.
Well, I would think at this point
they would have done it a long time ago, but who knows why they were waiting. They wanted to see if Puerto Rico, what happens to Puerto Rico when Puerto Rico isn't relevant in the general election, so. Go figure.
Well, I'm just wondering if when Barack Obama becomes president, if he does become president, if Hillary Clinton will still be thinking she's got a shot at it. If only she could take Florida. You know what I'm saying? A year from now, when Barack Obama is putting his cabinet together or whatever he's doing a year from now.
Right.
She'll say she'll be on television or she'll be going from studio to studio asking for people to interview her. This is awful. I feel bad for her. I really do.
I really do. And you know what? I'm a black African-American male. And I sit there and say, you know, because my friends said, oh, you're only voting for Barack because he's black. No, that wasn't the case. And actually what turned me off to her was when Barack said, you know, he would talk to Iran. And remember, she laughed and said, oh, how naive that is and da-da-da. I was like, you know what? This is a game changer here.
Yeah,
and from that point on, it's just been that way.
I know, and to all the people who would like to, most of whom are female listeners, used to be listeners to this program, who have made it very clear in their emails they'd like to cut my throat and watch me slowly bleed to death.
Wow.
You know, all I can say, not my throat. Oh, all I can say, Kathy said, not your throat. That's not what they want to cut. All I can say is, you know, my position, I started this campaign season, it seems, on the one hand, like 1,000 years ago. On the other hand, it seems like it was just the other day. But honestly, believing that Hillary Clinton would probably be a pretty good choice. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with BartCop.com.
Yeah.
Okay, I adopted his position. And, you know, I love Bart Kopp. He's a great American. And he's a 100% Hillary backer. And the point he made from day one was that nobody could withstand the onslaught of the flying monkey right, the crazy bastards in this country, in the Republican Party, who would go after whoever the Democratic candidate was with the most outrageous horse crap, and that Hillary Clinton was the only one who could withstand that assault. I kind of bought into that. And well, not kind of, you know, like I say, Bart Kopp is a great American. And when Bart Kopp says something, I pay attention. So I decided, okay, let's check this out. But then I started looking at the record, Hillary Clinton's record. I mean, really looking at it. I've had other people say, well, Malloy, you don't know what you're talking about. You ought to see what this woman has voted for as a senator. So I started looking, and then I started listening to Barack Obama. And in listening to him, it started to occur to me that this guy was offering something truly outside the parameters of the same old crap, which I, frankly, am damn tired of. Now, you know, they talk about his lack of experience, yada, yada, yada. Maybe that's a good thing. And it's not just going to be Barack Obama. He also has a cabinet that he will, people that he will appoint. And we can wait and see. If Barack Obama turns out to be an empty suit, then 4 years after he is inaugurated, we can vote him out of office. But I am so tired of getting these emails from people who accuse me of everything from sexism to being a traitor because I happen to really delve into Hillary Clinton's record and what she voted for and what she believes is a proper course for America and realize, son of a bitch, I don't want any part of this. I've been there. I've done that. It's called George Bush. I don't want anything to do with it. So anyway, I hear what you're saying.
But I just want to say my uncle listens to you. He and I both listen to you every night religiously.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that.
We even talk about the podcast, and we talk. In fact, we were just talking about you while we were in Orlando. But
I appreciate it, Phil.
Take it easy, Mike.
All right, man. All right, thanks,
take care, Kathy and Molly. Bye bye.
I'll do it. Thanks for checking in. Hope to hear from you again. You know, one thing is certain, to me anyway, I don't know, maybe a lot of people are doing some rethinking tonight, but this assassination comment, to borrow a phrase, obliterates any thought, or to borrow a word, obliterates any thought that I think anyone had of her being a vice president candidate. Come on, this is insanity. You know, the vice president, come on. Think about it. All the hints at assassination by a vice president, how creepy would that be? You know what? Bang, bang, I'm next in line? Good God. We'll be back.
She'll never be anybody's vice presidential pick after that. Well, you know what happened to Bobby?
No, you're just a sexist.
I'd shine my light through the two Colorado.
Oh, my goodness, is Ken just sitting here reading this email from Trish in Reno? My bad. I'm sorry. Thanks to the crew for tonight and the entire week here. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay for invaluable assistance in putting this program out night after night after night, much to the chagrin of some of our listeners. Trish writes, Mike, thanks as ever for creative catharsis night after night. Whoa, you're welcome. Hillary, Trish writes, she's old, she's tired, bone tired, possibly on the verge of tears from frustration. The more she's assailed by press and popular opinion, not to mention Obama beating her, the harder she clings to her tunnel vision. It's all she has. She's an empty shell. Last shred of ethics lost along the trail. Habitually saying what is calculated to say for a particular audience, not a trace of spontaneity or genuine humanity. She's a robot on autopilot now. Write a book about children and vote for cluster bombs. Talk about obliterate and assassinate. The latter, I think she was just muddled. Wind her up and trot her on the stage again with the makeup and the hairspray and the pantsuit and no dim idea who she is at the center of it all. If this sounds sympathetic, it is not. She disgusts me possibly even more than she disgusts you. As a woman, I'd like a real woman for president, a woman who makes decisions based upon nourishing our common humanity. I believe with all my heart that we will one day live out Julia Ward Howe's vision for us as put forth in her Mother's Day Declaration. Hillary Clinton is the opposite of this vision. But finally, what nobody else has said, Hillary never answered the question. Her bizarre ramblings were triggered by the question, what about party unity? She never said a damn thing about party unity. Because she's programmed, she can't even hear what's going on around her. She doesn't give a damn about party unity. She just keeps on like a greyhound after the mechanical bunny. Pathetic. But I don't feel sorry for her. I hope this brings her down for good. Trish in Reno. Yeah, I do kind of feel sorry for her, Trish. I do. Which doesn't lessen my intense dislike of any candidate. Man, woman, black, white, Jew, Gentile, I don't care. Somebody who uses these tactics, I am so sick of it. I'm so tired of it. The negative aspect of campaigning, the swift boat groups, these little off-the-stage organizations that put out these hate-filled, lying, putrid, filthy political ads, I'm just sick of it. I'm sick of it. I know it's not new. I know it goes back a couple of hundred years, probably back to the very first election. I understand. I frankly don't give a damn about that. What I care about is now, where it concerns how these elections are conducted, how the campaigns are conducted. I'm sick of having elections stolen. I'm sick of having corporate candidates. I'm just fed up to my eyeballs with this stuff. And then for Hillary Clinton, somebody that I had great sympathy for during the 90s, I hated what the media in all its aspects did to her and her husband. Now, admittedly, at the time, I wasn't paying attention to what was going on too deeply in the Clinton administration. I was a Democrat, and all I knew was that the right wing wanted blood, their blood, and would do anything to shed it. So when the deal came up, you know, when Bill Clinton's craziness got in the way where it concerned, what was her name? Monica Lewinsky. You know, I remember thinking to myself, you dumb son of a bitch, knowing that every right winger in the country is gunning for you and you do this. But even so, you know, had to defend him up to the last possible moment, up to the acquittal by the Senate. Had to defend him. And I felt sympathy for Hillary Clinton in a lot of respect, because in my opinion at the time, a lesser woman would have said to this clown, goodbye, you bulbous-nosed freak, I'm sick of it. I'm out of here. I've had enough of your Arkansas nastiness. I'm gone. No offense to Arkansas. You know what I'm saying. But she didn't do that. So I developed a kind of respect for her based on that alone, not on her politics, not on her party affiliation. But as the years went by and her record in the Senate became clearer and clearer, all of a sudden it was clear to me. I don't know why it's clear and not clear to anyone else. She votes like a Republican. It's very simple. Again, I don't care about her gender. If history is made because she's the first woman president, well, hot damn. Let's all jump around and you know, have a Burning Man festival someplace and declare, oh, the glass ceiling's been shattered. Screw that. I want somebody who can lead the country. And if it's her, fine. If it's not her, if it's somebody else, fine. But to criticize her record and to criticize this pathological tenacity, this death grip on something that is not going to be hers, is not something that I'll applaud or celebrate or have sympathy for. I feel sorry for her. That's what it's come to. Like, the circle's closed for me from feeling sympathy for her 10 years ago to feeling sympathy for her now. It's heartbreaking. I just wish she would get off the stage. I just wish she would make a graceful exit and go away. Go be the senator from New York. Just continue to be the senator from New York. It's just ridiculous. I swear to God. Oh, yeah, we'll be off Monday for Memorial Day. Oh, small miracles. So we'll see you Tuesday, all right? Have a safe Memorial Day. Take care. Do what we're going to do. We're not going to do a damn thing. Stay off the road. I'll see you Tuesday night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Have a nice weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.